The clap. Oh, hello everybody, and welcome to our Stay in the Sweet Spot call for July, the July call with me. I'm excited to be here to share. You know, there were a lot of questions that came up on the Facebook group, and I did answer quite a number of those on the group. So I'm going to, I don't see Angelica here, so I'm going to have to go out to the Facebook group. So forgive me and give me some time because I thought she was going to collect those for me. Facebook. And then we're open to whatever questions you have. So even if you didn't submit one in there, I'm totally open to answering it. So groups. And the sweet spot, stay in your sweet spot. Let's see. Oh, where did it go? Create new group. Unstoppable. Facebook. And you know, I use Facebook on my phone and it makes these reminders and then it tells me. So I'm not very good at it on the computer. All right. So there was a post that Marcia did. And all right, I've got that in front of me. Great. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to start with the questions that came in on the Facebook group, and then we'll open it up for you guys to ask me questions here, either in the chat or just, I prefer to talk to you. So I prefer if you just ask me, you know, raise your hand and we'll talk. So let me go to the Facebook questions first. All right. And some of these I answered, so. So Ronnie, 2 weeks I've been visiting family. Other than eating more meat, than I have in the last year, I've been kept up with the protocols. I don't eat sugar or crap, but sometimes I overeat. I notice blood sugar going up, but also energy is almost normal. Sleep is not good as it has been for a while. I decided that I need to get very strict again. This morning, fasting blood sugar 90, higher than usual. An hour later, when I started breakfast, it was 100. Then after 30 minutes, I finished a green shake, blah, blah, good stuff in the green shake, spiked to 130. So it went from 100 to 130. Looking to see what in there might have been. It doesn't sound like, it was so disappointing yesterday, I only ate twice. So here's the thing I want to really reinforce with you guys. At least 6 hours apart, 14 hours, not gained weight, down to 127 this morning. Hypoglycemic, I don't know. Okay. So, visiting with family in most people's worlds, at least in my world, is one of those things we call a stressful event, right? You're out of your normal routine. You're feeling pressured to kind of either eat what they're eating or to have to deal with the, oh, no, thank you. Oh, no, thank you. I don't want to eat that, and deal with their stress. So just the fact that you're there and out of your routine. And if it's visiting with family, it means there was some travel involved. And travel in this day and age is a little bit on the stressful side. So I would go back to what you've been doing that's working. And just even just stop measuring for a day or two, right? Just so you don't create more stress. Oh my God, what did I do? And I traveled and I threw myself off. I've been doing all this great work. And just let it be, right? And then give yourself, you know, do some intermittent fasting if you want to do that. Go back to what you know is working and then start testing again. Because it is, I don't know if anybody here has just like visiting family is the most blissful, peaceful, wonderful experience on earth. Who has had that experience? It's usually stress around it, right? It's just being in an unusual environment. You're fearful that they're going to be critical or they are openly critical of what you're doing because it's different. So I would just, that happens to me all the time. If I travel and I'm staying with people, it's a stress on my system and my blood sugar will go up. Our blood sugar is going to respond to your environment. And yes, of course, sleep. If you're not sleeping as well, it's going to respond. The issue of hypoglycemic, you might be reactive hypoglycemic. And the way you know that is to test more frequently and see if you can catch it. But that, I think that's just part of the whole spectrum. of blood sugar imbalance, right? Some people experience it just with lots of highs. They come back down to normal. They go high. Some people, that overproduction of insulin will cause it to go low. If you wanted to check that, what I would recommend you do is get a lab test on insulin, do the insulin, and then do it, see if it's elevated at fasting insulin. And if it's not, then do another, like a test on your highest glycemic meal and see how high it goes. You know, and if it's going super high, or put yourself in a stressful situation and see what happens. But if it's going super high and then you have a drop in your blood sugar thereafter, that would be reactive hypoglycemia. So is Ronnie on the call? If you want clarification. All right. I'm going to go back to find where I was. Darn it.
Dr. Rita Marie. Hi. Yes. Okay. So you're going through your Facebook queue already? I was going through
Facebook. Are you available to do that? Have you collected those? Or
yeah, I've got a list. I wasn't able to get into the call until a little late, so I don't know. That's why I was a little behind, but I have a list.
Okay, great. Super.
Yeah. So yeah, you just did Ronnie's, which was towards the end of my queue. Have we gone over Camilla, Martha?
No, I haven't done anything. It's at the top of – oh, I just hit it. I told everybody – I'm bad at Facebook. I don't do Facebook on the computer, and it looks like there's 15 more comments above.
Yeah, those. Exactly. Yeah. So, okay, I'll go to the top. Yeah. I'll go to the top. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So we're starting with Camilla. She asks, is there research that you're aware of connecting alcohol dependency with blood sugar imbalance? It seems logical that sugar craving and alcohol craving would be related. Are there sweet spot supports that would be helpful for someone who's trying to eliminate alcohol from their life?
Yeah. So, you know, the thing with, I'll go to the second part first. If somebody's trying to eliminate alcohol, the only way that I know that works if somebody has an alcohol dependency is cold turkey. It is the only way that works because it's such a strong addiction that I don't know anybody that's able to just cut down. It's just a known thing, right? Oh yes, I'm just going to have one beer a week with my friends. And the next thing you know, the six pack's gone. It just doesn't work. So eliminating alcohol means cold turkey, unfortunately. And, you know, there are genetic tendencies towards that. There are, and there's, if you look at genetics, there's specific SNPs that are related to alcohol and alcohol processing. When you look at family history, I mean, I stay away from alcohol 100%. For a while, I was even careful about tinctures because I was afraid of it because there's so much alcoholism in my family. And when I used to drink, I would say, I'm just going to have a glass of wine out with the friends. And the next thing you know, I 4 or 5 drinks later, and I didn't have the control I wanted to have with it. So there are genes that have predisposed you to addiction. And so I think that, yes, there's a connection with sugar. In fact, there's a specific, and I don't remember if it's a gene or an enzyme pathway, probably an enzyme pathway controlled by a gene, where people of Asian descent will actually convert sugar into alcohol in their stomach. Has to do with an enzyme called acetaldehyde. And so these people are like eating Snickers bars and getting drunk, right? So the best thing to do is what we're doing is eliminate it, like eliminate sugar, eliminate alcohol. And that's the only really way that I know of. And yes, they are connected. And that's the same with me with sugar, right? I can't just let myself have a little bit. And a lot of people are like that. Oh, it's just, some people are fine. You have a little bit of taste of sugar here, there, the other way, not me. If I'm going to have a bite of sugar, I'm going to eat the whole package. And then I'll say to myself, oh, I'll just finish the whole thing so it doesn't tempt me. And then I'll start on the no more tomorrow. Who's ever done that? Has anybody? Yeah. Common, right? Because it is an addictive substance, and it does trigger and it does bind to opiate receptors in the brain and opiate receptors, right? How many people who are addicted to heroin can just go, oh, I think I'll just have heroin every now and then? No. How many people can do that with cocaine? No, it's very similar. And there's very opiate with them. Yeah.
Is it possible to do the genetic testing through you for those SNPs?
Go to 23andMe.com. And then once you get it done, you would go to my favorite report because it's the easiest for the average person to interpret. It's a genetic detoxification. It has it all mapped out into the types of them. And then there's a book And if you go there and you order that report, it'll tell you to get the book on Amazon. And then on the report, it says, you want more information about this? Go to pages 23 to 33 in the book. So it's a really great way to empower yourself to understand your genetics. Does it cover every single gene that is covered? No, not at all. Is the 23andMe health report useful? No, not at all. But when you look at the individual SNPs, you get to see what there might be, where there might be some issues for you.
So first 23andMe and then a genetic detoxification.com.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Are you coming to the event? You guys have a free ticket. Come to the event that's happening. The genes diet
in July. Yeah.
July is 2 weeks.
Oh God. Yeah,
3 months ago, we were saying come to it in July. Now we're saying come to it in 2 weeks. I can't believe it. Yeah. So we'll go through a lot of that stuff there.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And just a quick note on 23andMe, use the most affordable test. Don't buy their extra stuff because the genetic detox report or genetic genie, whatever you use, is going to give you all that info. You don't need to pay 23andMe for their little interpretation.
For their interpretation, which is like, you have a 2.2% increased risk of Parkinson's or you have a 5.1%. Yeah. It's just not that useful, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'll teach you ways to look at that during the event that will blow your mind.
I didn't do that. This is Trina. I did not do that because I was afraid it might not come back in time.
Well, that's okay. But I will give you some sample reports. And as I'm going through them and I'm explaining, you make notes on the sample reports and we'll get you all these details. You make notes on the sample reports. So when you do yours, you can go back and look at your notes and see what I'm talking about.
Is that a good way to do it? It's fine.
Yeah. And also you guys are VIP. So you guys have access to the recordings afterwards and you'll have permanent access basically to the recordings afterwards. So you can make a note even to yourself like, oh, I want to make sure I re-listen to Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m., you know, whatever. And then you can listen to them over and over. And then when you get your own report, you can listen again.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. Next.
All right. Next question's from Martha. A couple questions. I don't sleep badly, but I do get up to urinate once or twice a night. Sometimes my mind will get caught on something, and then I take a long time to get back to sleep. Melatonin helps at heart math. Once in a while, I wake up bright-eyed, a bushy tail, but I want to wake up that way every day. So we'll go through that first. I'll ask the next question.
Yes. Yeah, so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. The stuff I put out on Saturday, the new sleep, that's the part one of the sleep. And then I'm working on part two of the sleep, which will go out this following Saturday. And so I want you guys, here's the thing. If you're waking up in the middle of the night to pee because you have some bladder irritation, that's something to work on, right? Is it just that you have a small capacity bladder? Are you drinking too much late at night? Or here's the other issue. Are you waking up in the middle of the night and for some other reason and notice you have to pee, right? So you're gonna learn a lot of strategies here to help you to optimize that sleep. Sometimes just waking up and going to the bathroom, going back to sleep, as long as you fall right back to sleep, it's not a big deal, right? We just need to get these groupings of solid sleep. And in the one, not the one that I already gave you, but the one for this coming week, it's all about sleep cycles. And teaching you about how to understand your sleep cycles. And as long as you're getting to the end of a sleep cycle before you wake up, and most people that wake up in the middle of the night to pee, it's usually not, oh my God, I gotta pee. You know, you're like waking up desperate, right? It's usually you wake up and you go, oh yeah, I gotta pee, let me get up and pee. You're usually at the end of a sleep cycle where the body goes, I'll do it this way. You start out light, you go into drift into sleep, and then you go into deep sleep. You stay into deep sleep, you maybe REM sleep. You come back up, and it's usually right when you're coming back into the light sleep before you dip down into the deep again, that's when you're aware. So you've got some awareness. If you wake up and you really don't have to pee, or you just go, it'd be a good idea if I pee, you can try it one night and see if that prevents you from going back to sleep. Because it's in that half state of drowsiness, like you're probably laying there going, oh, I really don't want to have to get up and pee, but I feel like I have to. And then you have to pull yourself fully back to alert, and it will take a little bit more time. if then once you're fully alert and you go to the bathroom and you start thinking about all the appointments you have to do the next day and all the things you have to do the next day, that can be problematic. So at that point, you know, depending on how late in the night it is, melatonin may or may not be a good idea, because melatonin will put you back into very deep sleep that's more suited for earlier in the night. So melatonin is actually more suited for before you go to bed. And in the middle of the night, sometimes, like my son will say, I take melatonin whenever I don't have to get up for a class the next day and I have to stay up or whatever, because if I take melatonin, I might sleep through my alarm. That's how deep it puts him. And he only takes a minuscule amount, like 0.5 milligrams. So depending, right, that may make you feel worse in the morning if you take melatonin in the middle of the night. If you take it before you go to bed, different. And then there's certain herbs that we talk about. So watch the little video that I gave you and read the little description this week. In the last, I think it's number 6, that's about the herbs. But like things like passion flower are really good. And things like magnolia. And magnolia I love because it helps to calm down the cortisol from flowing. And it also helps with blood sugar. So you might look at some of those and play around with some of those herbs. It's hard to say what exact herb is going to be the perfect one for you. And it might be a combination, right? So there's this, you know, it could really be a combination of herbs. And you try, I tried that one. No, I tried that one. I tried that one. But you tried them each individually. So some trial and error is often involved with that. But I've had several people who have, the mind racing late at night. And some of them, I personally, passion flower is really good for me. I know some other people where magnolia is really good for that. That help, Martha? Good.
Okay. One more question from Martha. Oh, I lost my page. Here it comes. Okay. Would you reiterate the process for introducing new foods after a reset? There seems to be more than one way to do that, both solo and in combination.
Yeah. So if you're going to say you have this half a dozen foods that you found raised your blood sugar, I'd recommend you do them singly. But you add them to a meal that you know already that doesn't raise your blood sugar. When you have, like, say you're going to have grapes and you want to test grapes. If you just have grapes by themselves, the likelihood of them raising your blood sugar is high. If you have grapes, but you have it with this big, beautiful salad or a green smoothie that's, you know, low glycemic, and you know those foods don't hurt you, don't raise your sugar, I would add that food in a small amount. I'd start with, when you're adding things back, start with the ones that are on the lower glycemic scale. This is where the glycemic index does come in handy. It's not necessarily true for you, but you look at the ones that are at the lower glycemic end of the scale and add those first. So I would add blueberries before I would try grapes. You know, I would try probably the fruit before I would try like a starchy vegetable, like a potato, and then just go through that sequence that we have in the transition period. Okay. Great.
Okay. Violetta asks, can I take glucose balance PX from restorative formulations as my supplement glucose support formula from Pure Encapsulations is out of stock?
Yeah, I love that one. That one's good too. Yeah, that one's a really good one.
Okay. Perfect. Wheaton asks, I've been noticing this month that I'm losing more than my normal amount of hair. No bald spots, but it's noticeably thinning. Any ideas why?
Well, there could be a lot of reasons why, right? So it could be a stress response. It could be a nutrient imbalance. It could be related to biotin. It could be an adrenal thing. It could be thyroid. So I think that's one of those things that we want to look at all the possible reasons. And always when something starts to happen more at a specific time than another, I always want to look at what happened in that time period of maybe, you know, a couple of weeks to a month before that, and see if there was something that led to it. Was it a change in shampoo? Was it a change in vitamins and minerals? Was it a change in diet? Was there a stress that happened? So yeah, those are the things that I would look at.
Okay. Thank you. From Pam, I'm a breast cancer survivor, 8 years. I wanted to share a blog that supports soy for breast cancer. She did share a link. That's totally opposite what my oncologist told me. Any opinion on soy, good or bad?
Yeah, so soy is one of those, could be good, could be bad. There's a lot of negative press on soy. the negative press on soy mostly is related to standard soy, right? Adding soy flour to this, and you know, it's all GMO mostly, and it's not fermented. My feeling on soy is it can be helpful for lots of folks. It definitely has some phytoestrogen effects, so you do have to be careful with how it's going to look. So, and anybody that's a breast cancer survivor, I would recommend a Dutch test before, Dutch test complete, before adding anything that's controversial that might have a phytoestrogen effect, so that you can see how is your body currently processing it. If you're going to do soy, it should be fermented soy and organic and fermented. So tempeh or miso, or tempeh or miso. But be careful about all those products that add soy flour and things like that to your, to the mix.
Thank you. Okay, last question that I have from the Facebook queue, because it looks like there's a lot of actual discussion going on in the Facebook comments. So maybe some of the questions that were already addressed, I didn't add to this queue. Mm-hmm. So people want to jump in and add when we're complete, then please feel free. So the last one's from Brenda. I do not have a problem with sleep. Lately, I've been waking up during the 4 a.m. hour. It's odd. The past few nights, I seem to wake up from a deep sleep. It's always at 4 a.m. I looked at the Chinese organ clock. It shows lungs at that hour. To my knowledge, I have no issue with lungs. My issue is digestion. What can the organ clock tell us? And I go back to sleep after I wake up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, you wake up. Do you wake up like with a start? Like it feels like you're in the middle of a deep sleep? Is she here? Where's Brenda? There we go.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes. And how long has it been going on for?
I would say the last few weeks, maybe a couple weeks. I don't know. Just recent.
Few weeks. Okay. Any other changes in your health status, in your exposures, in your diet, travel?
Well, I did travel, but changes in my health is all, which we've already talked about, is that I have bloating, and I think it's just getting worse, but I've pretty much been sticking to doing what I feel like I'm supposed to be doing on the sweet spot and working on it, fasting, intermittent fasting.
Yeah. So the paired lung and large intestine are paired. So if you look at the thing, it's lung, large intestine. So it could be large intestine related as opposed to lung. It could be that while you were traveling, you got exposed to something and your lung is working hard to keep healthy, right? To keep from becoming infected or whatever.
It was happening before I traveled.
It was.
Yeah.
And if you recall back to like the first time it happened.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. So it could be a cortisol thing, because cortisol does start to come up. So extra stress on the system. And there's a lot of reasons that go into some of these things. And I mentioned some in the Facebook group, that it sounds like you may have either, and there's so many things that can be causing the bloating, right? And it's evaluating which of those things are actually happening for you. So, you know, without more consultation or whatever.
I was hoping the organ chart was going to give me.
Oops. It often does give you a good idea.
That's what's healing during that time.
That's what's healing and it's most active, right? And so lung and large intestine are paired. So you can't just look at lung, you have to look at the large intestine as well. Even though the large intestine is probably on the opposite end of the day, that means it's the weakest. So the time of the strong organ is the opposite of its paired one, is the weakest at that time. Right. So it could be related to the gut. There could be a dysbiosis, an organism that's out of growth. It could be lack of the right organisms, the right, you know, lactobacillus and bifidus and all that. It could be stomach enzymes. It could be with bloating. It could be a SIBO, which is a small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So there's a lot that's pointing. I think this might also be pointing to the gut as well. When you wake up in the morning, are you bloated? Are you feeling discomfort in your gut as a
Usually I'm okay. Yesterday was worse than normal, but I had I eat my probiotics. I had sauerkraut, and then I had a cashew yogurt that has probiotics in it. And I'm thinking that maybe that was it, because that's not something I normally eat. I just recently bought this.
The cashew yogurt. But you haven't.
Yeah, the cashew yogurt. But yeah. I'm thinking maybe I had just too many probiotics in my meal. I only had one meal yesterday. Normally I'm better in the morning. This morning, not so much. And I just decided I'm going to change this into a 24-hour fast, because after that meal, I didn't feel like eating. So I'm waiting. I'm going to at least go 24 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, whenever something happens that causes your gut to get aggravated, it's always a good idea to wait. Wait until it feels good again.
Oh, I'm losing connection. I hope I don't lose connection.
Sorry. Okay. Get some more water. Excuse me. I'm going to fill up my water because I'm dehydrated this morning.
Okay, my water's in.
Angelica, when she comes back, can I ask one more question?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're done with our queue. So yeah, this will be read time.
Yeah. So what's your question?
Okay. So I know this is, I think, beyond this class, but I just thought you could maybe give me some general idea. When I have stomach issue, it's always, and this has been this way for several years, it's always on the left side of my abdomen. That's always where I feel it. If I always feel better if I just press on that or lay on my left side. And I've looked this up before, trying to go, what's going on with my left side? And I even think the last few days when I've been bloated, I look down and I think it's even more distorted on the left side. No, it's not
the
really
lower part below your belly button or above your belly button?
Probably right at about that same level.
Right at?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the descending colon at that point. Now, is it more towards the middle or more towards the outer at that point?
Outer.
The outer, okay. So that's the descending colon. It's the part of the colon that's going down right before the sigmoid colon, which is that kind of wiry, stretchy piece. It's really common for people to get some blockage, you know, like things get stuck because it's, you know, the colon's going around like this. Then it comes out, and then it goes through this S shape like this. So it's very common for things to get trapped, right? Are you having, do you have a tendency more towards constipation, diarrhea, loose stools, hard stools?
For many, many years, it was constipation, and I've been on thyroid, Armour thyroid for about 20 years. When I started Armour thyroid, I didn't know what to do now. If I would have, you know, then I would have just changed my diet and tried to work with it. But I've been on thyroid for 20 years.
Yeah.
So I constipation was always an issue. Since doing Sweet Spot, no.
But there might still be, like, in one of the pockets, it's possible that one of the, there's these things called diverticuli, and there's these little pockets, and it might, there might be something stuck in there. I would say, given that, I would spend a lot of time before a meal, lay down with your knees bent and then just do an abdominal massage. If you go, just look up, there's beautiful YouTube videos on abdominal massage. And I forget her name, Rosita something or other. I forget her last name, but she does these beautiful videos on how to do an abdominal massage to keep things moving. And anybody that has trouble with bloating and movement, sluggishness of movement, before you eat meal, and then, you know, maybe not right after a meal, but, you know, within maybe an hour after a meal, to lay down and do it again. And it just keeps things flowing. But it might be something trapped in that sigmoid area.
Okay. Right? And would an enema help that or no?
An enema would help that a lot, because an enema won't go around to the other side, but it will definitely go up that way. So you can try an enema. Right. But when you do an enema there, you have to hold it. So you have to, what I would do first in doing an enema, I would do an enema and clear yourself out. So if you can't hold it, you just release, release, release. And then you go back and you do another quart, warm water, and then just go and let it flow in and put your legs, you know, back, but lift your bottom and just hold it, right? So that you can hold it in there so it flows in to that area. Pillow under your buttocks to angle it back so it flows into that area better. But that's close to the end. If you're talking at your navel area and below, that would easily be helped with an enema.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it may take a few times, right? Especially if it's impacted fecal material there, that's hard. And don't be surprised if it releases and is a really foul stench or some wild looking stuff that comes out.
Okay.
Okay.
What is a colonoscopy they're always wanting to do? And I've never had a colonoscopy. If I had a colonoscopy, would that help that or not?
Wouldn't help it, but they see if there's something there. Well, they make you clean out before you do. So yeah. They give you these horrible laxatives you do. And
Yeah,
and they would see if there's anything in there, if there's any kind of polyp or diverticuli or something like that.
Okay. But I've just put it off. I've never had one done.
I've never had one done either. I don't intend to.
Okay.
yeah.
I'm more concerned about the medicine to put you out in twilight. Exactly. I've just told them if I'm going to do it, I need to stay awake.
And people, they won't let you do it that way. I don't know of anybody that lets you do it that way. You know, what's that, Wheaton?
I'm allergic to eggs. So they couldn't put me out when I had my colonoscopy. And I don't recommend doing it that way. It was extremely painful.
Painful.
Because of the amount of air that they push into you.
Yeah.
So it is possible.
It is, yeah, they will do it, but it's not comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Arnold,
I'm
a GI nurse. So yes, you can have a colonoscopy without sedation. But yes, Wheaton, you are totally, totally right. It is very uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable.
And we don't use air. We use CO2 because it you can expel it easier and quicker. People don't get nauseated. They don't have a lot of gas with it. But some places still do the air. So yeah, but it is possible. But yes, I've seen people with just sweat pouring off their face, you know, because it's uncomfortable.
Right. And then how do they keep you from moving? That's the other thing. I think they want.
Well, you're awake. We just talk. You I or whoever's there, just talk to the person and just, you know, keep reassuring them and calming them so that the doctor can, you know, get around and get what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a doctor tell me that he could do it that way, but most people he said you need to still plan someone to drive you home because you're going to end up wanting.
Yeah. And I mean, there's things you can do to calm your nervous system down. There's nervy kind of herbs that you can do, tinctures of them. I wouldn't take capsules because then it's going to get, you know, be solid material there. But some sort of like a milky oat or lemon balm or valerian or something like that, that could calm you down more so you don't feel it as much. Yeah.
Thank you. I know that was like off topic, but... Not really for me.
Well, speaking of, you know, off topic, there's so much that goes into it. And this program was geared towards getting the blood sugar balanced. And we find that for lots of people, that is the linchpin, you know, and it does things. But then for others, it just starts the process. And we start to see, like, you found that your blood sugar is great with the sweet spot diet, but there may be some things in there that are aggravating to your gut, right? That you're having more of than you had before that are aggravating to your gut, which is why we sent you guys out an email and almost nobody took us up on it. But that if you want to talk to somebody on our team, we're offering strategy sessions to say, hey, here's where I'm at. What would be the next best steps to see if our year-long coaching program, the Energy Recharge Inner Circle, is right for you. And that's where we will go through everything, right? You go through assessments, you know, paper and pencil assessments, but also lots of labs. And you get assigned a coach to work with you privately. You get assigned two coaches to work with you in a group. You get to come to calls with me. And there's labs included at some of the levels of that program. So for those of you who want to go to the next step, like you're saying, there's thyroid issues, right? Whenever we start to talk about any one thing, it's what else is going on. And the goal of this program is to work with you step by step to unravel the whole health picture. So if anybody wants to talk to somebody on our team, Annette is here and Angelica, they're going to be talking to people. I can give you that link. Do you know the link off the top of your head? There's a page. Let's see. Let me just find it. I had it. I think it's ERC. Give me a second.
Yeah. Kim sent me something. I can send it to you. See if that's right. Okay, I'll send it to you. And
it's the one that was mistakenly put into the ERC newsletter last week instead of that link.
She told me that was the one to use for.
No, there's a special one for Elite. All right, let me see if I can find it. See if you can send it to me in chat. I'll see if that's the right one.
Yeah, I sent it to you. That's what she told me was for sweet spot and body balance people. So
yeah, sweet spot and body balance.
Yeah.
People. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
The people that are already in ERC get a different one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
So
I'm going to put it in the chat. Where's the chat? But I would love to have you have a conversation to see if that's something that we, you know, if you have some longstanding issues that need to be resolved and you haven't been getting anywhere on your own, or you've only been getting part of the way there, you just want the guidance and the support, just go ahead and set up a time to talk to one of these guys to see if this is a good fit for you. So, and they'll give you, and that page gives you the details. So if you click there, it tells you a little brief about the different levels. And then if you click, there's an invitation document that goes into the details of what's included with that. And I know a couple of you are set up for appointments, but not that many. So just maybe I wanted to make sure that you were clear on what that was. All right. Who else has questions?
So going to the chat now, the Zoom chat, we have a few that came in. Wheaton asked, I did switch my thyroid medicine 2 months ago to separate to a separate T3 and T4. Do you recommend a combo pill or individual? Perhaps that's related to the hair thinning.
Yeah, I mean, that could be it, right? We talked about that briefly last week when we chatted, but I think that the thing with the combos, the thing with like going from Nature Throid or Armour Thyroid, or there's a bunch of others, the combo, you don't really get to control how much is in it. And they seem to vary batch to batch. It's kind of confusing. So a lot of people who are prescribing will do is give a combination of T4, T3 and try to balance those out to get the right, not only lab testing, but also how you're feeling, right? Some people, if their lab numbers come up to what we think is a good number on T3, they're all agitated because it's too much. So I think that, you know, it could very well be if your thyroid changed. And again, that's where the big scope is, and you'll get a lot more support when we work together in ERC. It's like all of those things that go into what's like, okay, this symptom started here. Like, what are all the things that happened around that time? And if you're not a trained professional, you don't necessarily know how to ask or even observe the questions that might be going into it. So definitely if the thyroid medication shifted, that could be very well associated with it.
Okay.
There was something, I saw a question here. Does ERC require to assist to weekly call during a day in September? I weren't sure. So the calls for ERC, for the private calls with your coach, get set up whenever it is that you're available, that you're both available. For the group calls, we alternate days and evenings. So sometimes they're in the day and sometimes they're in the evenings. You have the option to attend more than one call a week, actually. So we don't expect you to attend all of the calls, but we have a lot of calls laid out with me, with the coaches, with the coaching teams. And so you get the opportunity for the coaching team. You get to sign up for that coaching team when that's available for you. So we'll be sending out a list of saying, here's all the different coaching groups and when they're meeting, and you get to pick the one that works for your schedule. So, yeah. Okay.
Okay, back up to questions. Marcia said, I have stable blood sugar, usually wake up with low 80s, sometimes high 70s. Despite this, I've gained a lot of weight rapidly the last few months. What's the relationship between weight gain and glucose readings, if any?
Yeah, so, you know, glucose, elevated glucose readings are going to create weight gain. Eating too many calories is going to create weight gain. Being more sedentary is going to create weight gain, and being more stressed. And a lot of folks have gained weight over the last few months because of the stress, right? The environment of feeling like, oh, am I doing the right things? And am I going to get sick? Is somebody in my family going to get sick? So that's hard to say. So why have you gained weight when your fasting glucose is sound good? What about your peaks and what about your valleys? And what about other eating foods that maybe your body's sensitive to? So that's one thing that people kind of don't think about, like in terms of bloating. There's all these little lymphatic glands that line the intestines, right? So you think about, you know, the lymph glands in your neck, if ever you've gotten a cold and they get swollen, it's like, oh, wow, look, feel that, you know, or under here. Now imagine this 22 feet of intestine with all those same lymph glands lining them, and then they're wrapped around each other and coiled so that there's 22 feet of it in your gut, and you have a response to something, whether it's to a bacterial thing or a viral thing, or to a food allergy, an allergen that something you're sensitive to, and those little lymph glands get swollen. Imagine they're winding all around each other. That can cause you to go from having a flat belly to a 6-month pregnant belly within half an hour, right? So those are the kinds of things we need to be looking at. Are there some allergens that you introduced back into your diet that you're not aware of that aren't necessarily causing that immediate, like hives or diarrhea or bloating or gas, but it could be causing extra weight and extra weight retention. So those are the things I would be looking at. Is that clear, Marcia? You can open up your line and...
Yeah, that's clear. But I was thinking that if I were, if my blood sugar were fluctuating so much, eventually my baseline would be higher. You know, my fasting glucose would show up higher and higher and higher.
Yeah, not necessarily. If you're producing a lot of insulin and you eat something and those sugar goes up, but then it comes back down dramatically because you're producing insulin, that could be an issue as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you changed your diet significantly over the last few months?
No, not really. That, you know, I'm going to have a coaching call with you soon. I have to contact you about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I've gained over 20 pounds.
Whoa.
In the last few, just like really, really.
Any shift in supplements? Any shift in medications?
I've been off medication.
Off of them. So that should be helpful. Yeah. I would say do a couple of days of chronometer.
I have that down to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And then let's look at it and see what we can figure out.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. You're welcome. Because you're not less active. I keep seeing you're going out and going on hikes a lot. So it's not like
you're... Yeah, no, I'm not less... That's why it's just... And like last week, I gained 3.5 pounds. And I, you know, it's like it just keeps going. I just feel like I'm a balloon. I don't really understand.
Yeah.
And I know the stress and the family stuff that's happened.
Right.
But, you know, I'm meditating and I'm walking in nature and I'm seeing
you're
friends.
You're sleeping better, right? For a while...
Yeah, I'm sleeping better generally.
Generally.
Well, Andy wakes me up a lot early in the morning, but I go back to sleep.
Well, that's good. Yeah. So it sounds like all the right stuff. So is there any fluid retention? Like,
yeah, a lot of fluid retention, but my blood pressure has been good.
Wow.
So okay. It doesn't make, yeah, I'm very, very.
Yeah. Yeah. There might be some food allergy thing in there.
Yeah. Ugh, okay.
You know, that's a pain.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's look at it. Get on my calendar.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. From Rami, if I'm participating in strenuous activity for long periods of time, can I eat extra or should I stick to the 5 to 6 hour meal spacing? I'm talking about super long hikes with huge elevation gains, or do the same rules apply?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I'm not a big fan of eating in between, but I think that if you're going to be burning that much, if you want to have the energy to be able to do those kinds of hikes, you do have to fuel more. And you want to make sure that you've got some glycogen stores that your body can use during those hikes. So I would recommend that, you know, a couple hours before, an hour before, that you do have a good meal that's going to carry you through a strenuous hike.
So that was more about timing of the meal, but maintaining the meal space, but you're just saying have a meal closer to the hike.
Yeah, right? I would have it closer. But if you are finding that you're just like tanking in the middle of your hike, then having something, even if it's just a handful of almonds or, you know, some, what else could be good? I mean, even taking a protein powder shake could give you some fuel, just because when I know for me, when I'm exercising, I don't like to have heavy anything in my stomach, but taking like in a water, like a little packet of protein powder and having that, if you're feeling like you're dipping down, maybe with some greens powder, and that would just nourish you a little bit during the hike.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Does that help, Ronnie? I see you're there, but yeah. Okay, good.
All right. Wendy had a comment that she was interested in ERC, but the cost of the year-long program is prohibitive, although it seems worth it.
Okay. So have you already talked to somebody and found out what those were and what the payment plans are and all that?
She said she was going to sign up for a consultation, but she says the cost of a year-long program is worth it, but prohibitive.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for letting me know that. Now, we work with people and we have payment plans. So if you're, you know, if you want to find out more, have a conversation with somebody and see if it's something you can work out. But, you know, it is a very costly program for us to put on. Obviously, there are 17 to 19 coaches that we hire to make this program happen. And we limit the number of people in the program to 40 to 50 to make it be that really very close-knit experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. From Violetta, does ERC require to... Oh, she already asked that. Okay.
Yeah.
We already got through that. Rob, are sugar alcohols bad for you?
It depends. That's a great question, right? For some people, they're horrible because of their gut dysbiosis and they cause bloating and gas. The ones that tend to be the most tolerated are erythritol. Because mainly the erythritol is usually absorbed further up. And it doesn't end up down in the large intestine where some of that happens. So it's experimentation. I don't recommend xylitol. Some people can tolerate in small amounts, like in chewing gum or something like that. Sorbitol and mannitol, I don't recommend because those are very irritating to the guts for just about everybody. But erythritol is oftentimes quite well tolerated. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Brenda asked, Brenda asked, I lost internet for a moment, was going to ask if I do the assessment call for ERC and don't join, can the information be given to the appropriate coach for me to do coaching calls?
Wait, say that again?
She asked if she does an assessment call for ERC but doesn't join, will the information be passed on to a coach so she could do coaching calls?
So that you could, well, so if you're not going to do ERC and you want to purchase a coaching bundle, is that what you're asking?
I believe that's what she's asking. She said,
yeah, so if the coach will have that conversation with you, if ERC doesn't seem to be the right fit, that you could sign up for a coaching package with a coaching call. Yeah.
Perfect. Aurali, I do not sleep well when fasting. I wake up and get up after 6 hours, usually several times before then. I'm afraid I'm missing needed sleep, but is this okay?
Well, it depends on why. So if you're sleeping well when you're not fasting and you're not sleeping well when you are fasting, then I would be looking at what could be happening there. So are you having a severe dip Are you having, it depends on what you're eating before you go to bed, or if you're talking 24-hour fast. So Orly, do you want to get on and just kind of clarify for me so I understand the situation a little bit better? That would be helpful. Is she on?
I don't know. I don't see her anymore. Oh, there she is.
Open up.
I think I sleep well when I'm not fasting, but I do usually wake up at least once a night to go to the bathroom or whatever. But when I'm fasting, I'll wake up more times a night and I'll get up. Usually I sleep 7.5 hours, but I'm lucky if I get 5 or 6 when I'm fasting.
So when you're fasting, are you talking like a 24-hour fast, a 36-hour fast, a longer fast?
I'm doing 72-hour fasts.
Like a 72, okay. So you will have, when you're eating, how close to bedtime are you having your last meal?
I'm trying to do it before noon.
Okay, so you're in, even when you're eating, you're having a window, a very long window from noon until the next morning? Is that what you're saying?
When I'm eating, I usually eat 2 meals a day and I'll have one somewhere between 12 and 2 and another one before 7.
Okay.
I'm fasting, I tend to start the fast somewhere around noon or 1 p.m.
Okay, and then you go for 2 days or It sounds like 3 days. Okay. There's a lot that's happening during fasting. There's a lot of metabolic reactions that are happening. There's a lot of cleansing reactions that are happening. And it's possible that you're unearthing some things to be released and it's causing your liver to be overactive. So, you know, it's hard to say. When you wake up in the morning after fasting, and if you've only had, like you said, 4.5 hours of sleep, do you feel less well rested than you do if you've slept 6 or, what did you say you normally sleep when you're not fasting? How long do you sleep?
Usually I wake up 7.5 hours on the dot.
Okay.
But right. when I'm fasting, like this morning, I got up at 6. I went to bed at 11. I was wide awake, and I didn't get out of bed right away. But I couldn't go back to sleep. I felt like I was rested. When that happens, sometimes I get tired in the afternoon. So I know I haven't had as much sleep, but usually I don't get tired in the afternoon.
So it's very common on more extended fasts, not necessarily like a 16-hour overnight fast or something like that, but it's very common for your body to not need as much sleep because there's not as much to process. And I remember when I did my long fast, this place had us have lights out by 9 o'clock. And I was like, I was wide awake. I didn't need as much sleep. So I find the same thing, that I don't need as much sleep as normal, because think about what your body's having to handle when you've eaten all day long, right? It has all the metabolic wastes and the processing of that food. And so there's a lot more for it to be dealing with, and whatever toxins are in there, whatever allergens, whatever inflammatory things. So it's not uncommon. And the reason I asked about how you feel, you were wide awake. It wasn't like you're groggy and you just can't fall back to sleep. It's more like your body's not needing it as well. So you might try doing that. And if you feel like, you know, you're getting a little bit more tired in the late afternoon, maybe try a power nap of 20 minutes just to see if that regenerates you.
Yeah. Well, I was just worried that I was losing needed sleep because that doesn't seem to be bothering me. I find the fasts actually easier than eating.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be worrying about that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. You just have less work to do, right? So the body's like, oh, fine. Yeah, I don't need to sleep.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Orly, did you want to ask about your other question, the blood sugar numbers between fasting and eating? Because you had another question about that.
Yeah, my blood sugar tends to be in the 90s when I'm eating.
When you wake up in the morning, you mean?
And throughout the day, because I've been using the Freestyle Libre, so I've tested
it. So it's not going above the 90s, but it's not going much below?
Is that what you're saying? Staying below 110. It's just it'll go around in the 90s most of the time. Occasionally it'll go down into the 80s. But if I'm fasting, it'll go down to the 70s. So I would like it to get it down to 60s. But obviously, if I'm in the 90s, that's a long way to go. And I don't know whether 90s is a healthy place to be.
Okay. Yeah, so 90s is not necessarily a good place to be. There's increased risk of a lot of things when it's in the 90s. 80s, you know, low 80s seems to be like the agreed upon, wow, this is great. If it goes in the 70s, I don't know why you want to get it in the 60s. I think you want to find what is your body's natural sweet spot. For me, it is the 60s to low 70s because I feel best that way. I have the most energy. I have the less food cravings and desires. That is my sweet spot, is like high 60s to low 70s. That's my sweet spot. It may not be that way for you. So I would say don't like try to get, like I would say do the right things and watch it. While you're fasting, it's going in the 70s. That's great. 3-day fast, that's totally normal. If you were to go to a 5-day or 7-day fast, you may find that it goes into the 50s even, or the 40s as your ketones go up. I've been as low, my lowest blood sugar reading ever was 34.
Wow.
It was on day 6 or 7 of a fast. And my ketones were up in the like 7s. And so I was perky and fine and feeling great because my body had adapted to burning ketones. So it could be that, you know, if you're doing 72-hour fasts, that you do these on a regular, maybe you do that once a month, and you, more and more you do it, the more stable that sugar is going to get.
Well, if your blood sugar is in the 90s, would you say that that is an indication that you have still a lot of sugar in your tissue?
Yeah, and still probably a lot more resistance in your cells than you need to be, and maybe more more insulin being secreted, which is contributing to that. So I would just do what it sounds like when you're fasting, you're going down. You're going to find that it naturally creeps down as long as you're doing the right things when you're eating. You know what I mean? You're not going off and eating M&Ms and drinking Coca-Cola. Then in which case the fasting is going to be just like this, you know, same as yo-yo dieting pretty much, right? So I found it just takes some time. And now I've been really consistent with my sugars. It's mostly in the 60s to 70s during the day. It may go up to the 80s after I eat and drop back down. But this has taken me years of really being dedicated to it and really having the discipline to only have these reasonable sized meals. Now, if I have a higher, bigger meal and I'm like, oh, I just want to eat more, it's really good, then my sugar will go up higher. So
I did an experiment last week where I was cooking a meal I had frozen. I do that a lot. And there were sweet potatoes and a beet that I just had cooked. And I took one bite of each. And I think there were a few small pieces of apple in it too. And my blood sugar went up to 126. So I realized I can't even take one bite of those sugary vegetables. Even
now, here's the thing. Did you eat them by themselves or did you eat it in combination with a big salad or a green smoothie?
I had a salad also, a big salad.
Okay. So it was just a bite of those with the big salad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're still in that really sensitive stage. And I will say I've been there, done that. You know, I've been through that. And it's taken, sometimes it just takes a long time when we have these genetic tendencies, and I'm loaded with genetic tendencies. And so it takes more time and more discipline. So I would say, don't let yourself like stress out about that. We get it in the 60s, that's a long way to go. It just do what you're doing. Do your 72-hour fast once a month would be really great. Do your intermittent fasting during the time. Make sure that the meals you're eating are just packed with nutrition, that you're not going off and doing these, like, I'm doing a 72-hour fast and then I'm going to eat, you know, nothing but whatever I'm going to throw out.
I haven't done anything bad since I've been in the program. I've been really good.
Good. So just keep it up. It sounds like you're moving in the right direction. Where were your sugars when you first started?
Oh, they were higher. I think the first week or so, they were above 130. And then they went down to, you know, probably 90 pretty quickly. And it's only if I do something that is like taking a bite of sweet potato that it gets me in trouble now. I'm usually always below 110.
Great. Yeah, I think you're heading in the right direction. And just be patient with your body. Right? It took a long time for it to get messed up, and it's going to take a long time for it to get back in shape.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Wheaton asked us about bloating. Sometimes she gets bloating, water bloating, she says, even if I have not eaten for 12 plus hours before, and I don't have bloating before I drink the water. Okay, so she gets bloated after drinking water, even though she's been fasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's always a mystery kind of question for me. Sometimes it could be that there's a valve blockage, right? Like there's, so you've got your stomach. Where is the bloating, first of all? Let's ask that. Is it right at the top part, or do you feel it down below?
Top part of my belly.
The top part? Okay. So there could be, you know, when you drink the water, there's valves that go into the stomach and then come out of the stomach. So it could be that you've had the water and then the valve at the end, the pyloric sphincter actually is what it's called, is locked shut and it's not allowing that water to come through. How much water and how long after drinking the water?
If it's 2 cups of water, it can be 15 minutes later.
15 minutes later, you're getting bloated, in which that case, that should have been like, yeah, that should be absorbed and really well taken care of. So it's up in the upper part. Is it more over to the left or is it more towards the middle?
Middle.
Towards the middle?
Yep.
Yeah. And when, how long does it take to go down?
Oh, it can be a couple hours.
Wow. Just from 2 cups of water.
Yep. And it's not all the time. Just sometimes, and I haven't been able to figure out a rhyme or reason to it. So I figured so many people were all asking about bloating, I figured I'd throw that one out there too.
Yeah, that's a sphincter issue would be, like if it's tightened, right? That it's just not allowing the water to just dissipate and get down into the small intestine and get absorbed. Is it usually on an empty stomach right after fasting and then it...
Yes, if I had eaten for 12 hours, but I can also get it if I've eaten a food prior, like something that I know doesn't give me bloating.
Yeah.
I can then get it after that as well.
And then get the water. Hmm. Well, when you take water too soon after eating something, it can dilute the stomach acid and the enzymes. So that can be, but with the straight water, that one's a tough one. The only thing I can really think of mechanically would be that valve is being shut. So try this. If this happens again, lie on your back, knees bent, and then just really start to massage starting from under the left, the rib cage on the left, and then coming down.
Okay.
And then all the way down and just massage the whole abdomen and see if it gets things to move along.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ronnie, on food experimentation, when you want to try different foods, is there any rules of thumb you would recommend?
Say that one again. Ronnie,
on food experimentation, any rules of thumb you would recommend? That's a little, Ronnie, if you'd like to.
Like, what do you mean? Yeah. Do you mean adding back foods that you found to be raising your sugar before? Is that what you mean? If you want to add them back. You're muted. Let's see. Let's unmute you. Okay, now try. Whoops. Try again. There you go.
Hello. Hi. Yeah. Like if I want to try green apples again or something, because it's like, I had a couple of strawberries last week and I was scared to test it. And they were like really small. Like they were amazing because they were like, real strawberries, but I haven't had any fruit in months, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's like now I'm feeling like it's all around. It's like, how do I implement that? I mean,
that's a great question, and we cover that in the sweet spot, the transition, you know, the metabolic reset transition week. But it's really a matter of what do you want to try the most that you've been staying away from? Is there one food in particular?
Lots.
What is it?
I said lots.
Locks?
Lots. No, but it's, I guess it would be nice to be able to add berries.
Yeah, okay, so berries. So a couple of ways you can do it. Do you drink green smoothies?
I don't know what to do with the powders. Like I've gotten onto collagen, but other than the green, I don't do vegetables.
No, I mean vegetables, where you blend your vegetables in the blender and you make a drink.
Yes.
You do those? Okay. Yeah. So I would say take one that you know keeps your blood sugar nice and steady, and then just grab a handful of blueberries, and then just have a couple of sips of smoothie, have a couple of blueberries, have a couple of cinnamon, and test your sugar before, a couple more blueberries, more, and then do that, right? And then at the end, just watch it and see what it does to your sugar.
And so, right after you're done, and then about 45 minutes later.
Well, the way we taught how to do the peak, how to figure out what's going on and figure out your peak. And if it's fine, it's fine, right? And sometimes you figure out that, oh, if I have a handful, that's great. And the next time you try it with a cup and a half, you go, well, that was too much. And when you experiment that way, you can figure out what your threshold is. For me, a whole mango is a little bit too much. Yeah, I can do a half a mango with a big salad or a big green smoothie, and I'm fine.
Right? It just seems that the craziest thing will spike my blood sugar. This morning it was vegetables. Like, why? So I'm worried about it. I'm worried about doing anything, and it's like, I don't know what.
Right. I don't want you to go into food phobia. That's one thing I don't want you to do. So there are other things that mattered. How did you sleep last night? Were you stressed out? Were you yelling at your kid? Was the cat about to get hit by a car? You know, whatever other things might be going on that you eat a meal. You ate too fast, maybe. There's any number of things, right? So if random things cause your blood sugar to spike, I mean, it could be, like you said, vegetables. Well, what? If I eat if I eat too much in the way of cooked, what's it called? Onions, right? If I have a saute, sometimes cooked vegetables will make my blood sugar go up higher than a raw vegetable thing. So I eat just, you know, so you find out, you just experiment with it.
Yeah.
And get let go of the fear, because the fear makes it worse. It's like, okay, I'm going to have an experiment. So if the experiment bombs and my sugar goes up to 130, I learned something. I'm not going to die from my sugar going up to 130 once. But I know I'm not going to do that anymore. Okay. So I always add things to something, you know, how it affects you, right? I know how this smoothie affects me. My sugar goes from 68 to 82 and then it goes back down again. Great. I know how that affects me. Let me have a handful of blueberries. Oh, I had a handful of blueberries and it went up to 98. Still good. Yay. I can have those blueberries, right? I had the handful of mango and it went up to 150. Probably not a good idea. You know what I mean?
So last week, Angelica was mentioning that if those really low glycemic foods are spiking my sugar, then maybe my body isn't just, it's not regulated enough. Because last week I had extra meat. And I love that because it was extra energy all of a sudden. But if I'm not getting it from the vegetables, then maybe I'm just not regulated enough yet.
Maybe there's just not enough. You might have low stomach acid, in which case you're maybe not absorbing the protein as well as you need. And you're getting the extra protein from the meat.
Yeah. That could
be right. Nice. So if a certain food has, you know, say 3 ounces of meat has 20 grams of protein. I don't know the exact numbers. And say the same amount of vegetables or like a big thing of broccoli has 10 grams of protein, right? And you only absorb 10% of your protein. You're going to get more protein out of that meat because it's a higher amount. Does that make sense?
Makes lots of sense.
And it could be if you had more energy from the meat, it could be iron. Maybe you're not getting enough iron and absorbing enough iron from your foods and not making enough hemoglobin, right? So it could be that. It could be other vitamins or minerals that are in that meat that's not in there. So play with it. If you need to eat, you know, a few ounces of meat every day or every week or whatever the thing is, let's not let our food dogma get in the way of what our body really needs, but really looking at what is it in that caused me to have more energy.
Yeah. It's the meat is consistent. Although, I mean, I would like to not eat as much because I, you know, for all the reasons that we've talked about and that I've read about, et cetera, I'd eat like them, but if it really makes a difference. And yet, when I do participate in it, it's like I've got these blood sugar crazy. It's like so disappointing. And it's not like I'm eating crap. I really am not.
No. So protein, excess protein. So it might be too much and you have to find the right amount. Excess protein, the amino acids, what's called the branch chain amino acids can get converted to sugar. So you got to be careful about eating too much protein. And a lot of people are pushing, you know, a carnivore diet or, you know, a crazy keto diet where it's very little vegetables and mostly meat, those are not good for your blood sugar in the long run.
So last week is just a bomb. And so this week, okay, I'm not going to eat as much meat, even though I had great energy, because the blood sugar is so disappointing. So I'm going to drop back down and I shouldn't worry about last week. Just don't worry about it. Just go on.
Just go on and see how you feel, right? And where it's all a matter of fine tuning, which is, you know, there's a lot more that goes into it, right? Like without knowing your whole health history and all that, it's hard for me to say what it could be, but it could be some specific nutrients in the meat that you're missing.
So I think I need probably a good consultation. Maybe like, I thought, other than that, the ERC sounds amazing, but it's beyond my price point. So maybe like a few consultations would be great. Thank you so much for all of that information.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you can set up an appointment and talk to Annette or Angelica, and they can guide you in the right direction as to what the next. If ERC is not going to work for you, then what can you get? There's some coaching packages that you can get. But in the long run, ERC is the most economical because of what you get and how much support you get.
Oh, yeah, it sounds amazing. But if I just haven't worked, I'm not going to be working. I'm a tour guide.
Wow. Oh, no.
Yeah. Anyway,
and it's a matter, you know, the whole issue comes up a lot about, you know, I can't afford or whatever, and a lot of folks in that position will just, they do it anyway and they find a way to support it, because without your health you don't have anything. Without your health you don't have anything. So
yeah, agreed. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Anything else? How are we doing on time? We have a couple more minutes. We're just about
there. Yeah, there are a few more questions, but Tiffany did say back in the chat that she wanted to ask. So I think she's next. Tiffany?
Yep. I'm here. I had a couple questions on the blood test review. I'm due for a yearly physical, which I get my blood tested, and my doctor's really good about letting me add things to it that may not be covered by insurance, and I just pay for them. But when I called to make my appointment in June, I can't get it because of my age. They're not allowing people my age, it's Medicare, into the office to get a blood test and to get a physical. And so it's kind of crazy. And then the ERC, I started to fill it out and our internet is so slow. I'm not showing myself just because it slows everything down so much. So I reached out, I think if I can like just talk to Angelica or something and get the information that I need to fill out, because I am interested and to see if it's a right fit for me. So, and then the last question is, my juicer is not working well. Is there a juicer that you could recommend that is real reliable and does a good job with all the fresh veggies that are out?
Yeah, so I've not been in the market for a juicer for about 15 years because I've had one that's lasted for that long. So, and I have a Green Star, which I really like. There are others like that. They're double auger juicers. They're maybe juicers at this point, but there's a discountjuicers.com. They have a really nice comparison chart, but I use the Green Star.
Okay. Yeah, I've not heard of that brand. I will look it up.
Okay. And then as far as the ERC, what are you talking about filling out? I mean, there was just one sheet that said how, you know, there's a couple of questions on it. I mean, regardless of your internet, it's not a highly needed
thing. Okay, I will try again and see. It's just the more people that are on the internet, the slower it goes. And we have so many people up here right now that it's so iffy, and I never know how long I'm going to be able to get in to do anything before it just gets slow enough that it isn't
doing. Are you someplace temporarily, or is this your permanent residence?
It's my permanent residence, and it's pretty remote, and we have internet through the phone service, and at one time they were going to improve it, but they aren't anymore. They've kind of dropped back. And we're, well, there's a group of us that live here permanent year round, and we've been trying to get another service in, and we just haven't been successful yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, just so you know, with ERC there, that may be a deterrent to right. make that work for you as far as the
I understand
concerned, because it's a lot of internet stuff. I mean,
yeah. And that was a question I had too, is I just don't know how much at this point, how reliable it is. And in the winter, it's usually much better because there's only a few of us here.
Well, maybe then this is okay. Yeah, I would reach out, see if you can fill out that form and get on. There's what happens is you'll get to the page, you'll click the link. There's just a few questions about what are your main challenges, et cetera. And then you click that and it brings you to a calendar. And you click the calendar and you get on the calendar and you talk to people.
Well, I'm going to be in town on Wednesday. And there's high speed internet there. I will fill it out then.
Right. Yeah, so you get your choice of times, and you pick a time. Whoever's available at the time you want, then they'll be there for you.
Okay, and I have learned so much, and I continue to keep learning. And you know, I'm finding that I've been taking my blood sugar twice. When I take it, I've got two different meters, and it is so incredibly different. And so, you know, I'm trying to figure that one out.
Which two meters do you have?
I have True Matrix.
Oh, that's horrible.
Oh, no wonder.
That's a piece of garbage.
No wonder.
Yeah, I hate that one. That one was so unreliable.
So which one would you recommend then?
It's on the sheet, I would say.
Okay, I'll go back on there and look. Yeah, I'll
get it. The Lion is the most repeatable, reliable. It's usually 8 to 10 points higher than what's reality compared to others, but it's very reliable and it's very cheap.
Which one? Okay.
Rely on Prime. You can get it at Walmart.
Rather than Keto?
Well, the Keto is good, but it's more expensive, and you know.
Right.
But the Keto Mojo is good. Yeah. The Rely on is usually about 8 to 10 points higher than the Keto Mojo.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will do that, and then I've been doing that Dancing with Defenses.
Oh,
and
good.
That has been really good, but it has spiked me because of emotion. You know, I'm working through stuff. And so I think it's just, I just have to get through this period of my life.
Yeah, but when you've got buried trauma and emotional stuff and you bring it to the surface, then you're experiencing it directly as a cortisol elevation. And so you have to work through that to get to the other side. And the only way out is through, unfortunately.
Right. And I know that.
It's locked in your body and it comes out as all kinds of weird symptoms and imbalances.
Yeah.
So I'm glad
I'm just working with that. And then you started the call, we were talking about visiting family, and I'm going to be visiting and taking care of two lovely grandkids. And I feel so at home there, and they know how I eat. But it's still gonna be different.
Yeah, anytime you're out of your own normal environment.
Right.
You know, unless you're on a beach laying in Hawaii and people are serving you
food
all the time and you're relaxing all the time. I mean, it's just that's my dream someday. Live on all the beach.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I keep learning, and I'm going to keep going because I want to get better and better and better.
There's never an end to learning, and the more you delve in, and the more you allow. That's the thing. We have to allow what we're learning to not cloud our ability to just be, like to just really allow ourselves to just be. Because we're observing, and it's an observation. And if we go, oh, observation, and then you're all freaked out because why did this happen? And you know, then it's hurtful, right?
Yeah.
You want to use the observations to say, okay, what's about this and how can I shift it? And if you can't find a reason for one bad reading, ignore it. Who cares? It's one bad reading. Yeah. I mean, this happens to me sometimes. I'm like, why the heck did that meal affect me that way? It doesn't make any sense. I move on, right? And if it's consistently happening, then I want to find the reason and I want to shift it. But if one time something really out of the blue happens and you sit down, well, it happened to me once where I sat down and I had this salad of avocado, romaine, lettuce, and tomato and cucumber. I always would have that salad and it didn't do anything to my blood sugar. And that one day it caused my blood sugar up to 150. And I'm like, what? What? Well, it turned out that I had some stress in the office and there was a person that I was going to have a tough conversation with. And it was scheduled for that afternoon. And I was like, I wonder if it can stress you that, like avocado and lettuce. And I mean, really? That was it. Had the tough conversation, had the conversation, worked it out. And then I was back to normal. So there's all kinds of stuff. And sometimes there's this little things that bubble up from inside of us. That's old, right? Seeing something that reminds you of something and on a conscious level, you're not processing it, but on a subconscious level, you are. Boom, you know? So I would say, let's just allow, do our best when there's something that's consistently causing an issue. Then of course you want to do something about it. But if there's one thing and you can't figure out why, just move on and do it again. You have to have at least three things. Three times you have to test something. So if you test your blood sugar and your meter and it says 160 and you're like, what? That's insanity. It was just 90 a minute ago. You test it again. But you don't only test it one more time. You have to test it two. Because comparing two readings, it's random, right? It's like 50-50 chance. You have to have three. And if two of them are in the same ballpark and the other one's off, you throw that one away. This is what they do in statistical analysis too. You throw out the outliers because they're usually there's just some random reason for them happening. Makes sense? Be kind to yourself. Be loving to yourself. Know that you're working in the direction of achieving your ideal health. And know that every step you take is getting you closer. And if there's a step that's consistently taking you further away, then you have to go back. Even if it's a step that other people take and it gets them closer, that might not be a good step for you. Does that make sense? And don't judge it. Don't judge it. Just like know that you're here. The reason you're here is because you care. The reason you're here is because you want to be in the best possible health you can. And so everything you get is information. Everything that you put into your body or on your body and it reacts in a certain way, it's information. And that's all it is information.
So Dr. Rita Marie, I'm so grateful for you going back to all these blood sugar tests. I feel very far behind. It's doing me a lot of good. I now know that certain things go way up high. I know if I eat more of something right together, it goes up higher. But I still have not yet understood why me at my age, I'll be 89 in a month, should go through the metabolic diet. I have not done that. I'm in the very beginning stages still, but I'm learning all the time. I'm so glad I'm doing this testing. I have the Mojo thing. And I just wonder if I've missed something as to really why it's so bad to say go up to 130 if you go down again. And all these sorts of things. I haven't yet gotten my logic together to give me the impetus to take that diet on.
Okay, that's a great question. So if your sugar goes up momentarily to 130 and then it comes right back down, it's not gonna go up long enough, right, to cause a problem.
What's right back down?
Well, within 10, 15 minutes, it's back down to 110 or below. Then it's just a temporary shoot up, don't worry about it. But if it's taking, you know, an hour and it's kind of staying up there, the longer it's up there, the longer you're exposing your nerve endings to peripheral nerve damage, the longer you're exposing your retinas to the possibility of retinal damage, the longer you're exposing your kidneys.
And my basic problems are shaking hands and nerves, things in my fingers, and my glaucoma issues. And my temperature, when I go to church now, that I'm 94 temperature.
Thyroid. You probably have some problems with your thyroid. Either your thyroid itself, which you can test by getting a full thyroid panel, or the thyroid receptor issues. And thyroid receptor issues are almost as common as insulin receptor issues, but nobody's really talking about them, right?
I know that I tend to have low thyroid tests with a T3 and T4. And I have been doing a lot of holistic work over these many years. And I get such strange stuff. Like I got this amazing, they had to take the test again because I got my, that wonderful thing about the growth hormone. The
hormone, yeah.
I'm an 18-year-old boy and I'm this sort of was 80 and this sort of is crazy stuff. So I have good energy. I can do a lot of stuff. This business does not affect me a whole lot. So I'm feeling really delicate. Now I'm trying to, this question of involving myself further with this other program is kind of scary to me because it's expensive and I'm so busy, happily busy, that I haven't kept up with everything. Now I have been on every phone call.
Yes, you have.
And I've been taking a lot of the in-between stuff. I haven't done much with the Facebook because I don't like Facebook very well. Yeah. And I've been trying to go on some of your other programs. And my question, so today's discussion was excellent for me. And this whole question about what's, is there some stuff I've missed that tells some of the really bad effects that could shoot, that could help me decide to do this?
So it depends on like how often is it going up that high and how high is it going?
I can go up to 150, I can go up to 160.
Yeah.
And if I eat pineapple or a banana,
yeah.
But I found, for instance, I found if I savored a little square of sweet melon and had it every five.
Oops, she disappeared. Oh, bummer. I wanted to hear what she had to say. So let's pass on to Trina that she should set up a time to talk to you or and Annette to see what the next best steps for her would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that'll do it for today. We had a couple questions, but I'll address them on my live on Thursday.
Great.
And yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. So I look forward to chatting with you guys, knowing that I would love to have some of you just continue with us into ERC. I don't know how anybody even knows the price because we never talked about it. So that people are assuming it's expensive or if you've had strategy sessions and know it. But we have specials for you guys because you've been staying in your sweet spot and sweet spot. There's $750 right off the top that gets taken off because you've been in these programs. And then there's, if you sign up before the 24th, there's an extra, I think, $500 or $1,000, depending on the level you go with. So you're getting a lot. You're getting some bonuses as far as lab testing, which is included as part of the program. So that's actually part of what drives it up. But there's lab testing that you get. There's private coaching. And there's a whole bunch of bonuses that you get when you sign up before we go into our live event next week. So it's really a great opportunity for you and have a conversation and find out if it's really right for you. And if not, what would be the next best step for you if you do need continued additional support, whether it be a private coaching group or something like that. Okay, guys. So thank you so very much. I've appreciated having you here and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. Good to see you all. All right. Leave meeting. Okay.